Gratho stepped forward, grabbed a barely noticeable ridge projecting from the HTU at collarbone level, and pulled down. A retractable black screen deployed, slid down, and latched in place just above the waist bearing. All of the lights and displays were now concealed. Arcivault was matte black from head to toe, as if he'd been sculpted out of damp carbon.
"It is remarkable," Ossa pointed out, "when one considers that these were not even available when you, Fra Jesri, went up with the Warden of Heaven."
Jesri nodded.
"There are now 16 of them."
"But there are 11 of us,"
Arcivault exclaimed over his speaker. We'd forgotten he was there. His Skellahan groped at his waist, found the latch for the screen, and yanked it back up to expose the Spiele. His familiar look of bulging-eyed surprise was comically magnified.
"That's right," said Jesri. "The significance of that should be obvious," Leo said. "But I will spell it out. We can't screw this up. It is a similar story with the missile launchers. These were a military secret. There's no reason why the pedestal, who have obtained almost all of their knowledge of ARB from the leakage of popular culture into space, would know of their existence. They were specifically made to be hard to see from above, but as soon as one of them is launched, his thermal signature will be picked up on the geometer surveillance, and they'll know all about them. So they must be launched all at once or not at all. There are a couple of hundred. They're all going to be sent up within the same 10-minute launch window, which happens to be 3 days from now. 11 of them will be tipped with Magnifiques, carrying the members of this cell. Quite a few others will carry the equipment and consumables we'll be needing."
"And the remainder?"
Saman asked. Leo said nothing, though he did throw a glance at me. Both of us were thinking of the everything killers.
"Decoys and chaff,"
he said finally.
"What is it we're expected to do once we get up there?"
Arcivault asked.
"Consolidate a number of other payloads into a thrust platform. I won't dignify it as a vehicle. That will inject us into a new orbit,"
Leo said.
"An orbit that will bring us to a rendezvous with the Dabin Ernud."
"We could have guessed that much," Jesri said.
"What Fra Arcivault is really asking is..."
Fra Ossa stepped forward, giving Leo an "if I may" look. We hadn't heard much out of the Veil Leader, so everyone got where they could see him.
"The greatest difficulty for one such as you shall be not completion of the given tasks, but instead the humiliation and uncertainty that arises from not being able to know the entire plan. These emotions can hamper you. You must simply decide now, either to proceed with the awareness that the entire plan might never be revealed to you, and, were it revealed, might have obvious defects, or to turn away and allow some other person to occupy the spacesuit that has been allotted to you."
And then he stepped back. There was a minute of silence as all of us made our decisions, if that was the right word for what was going on in our heads. I didn't feel any of the emotions connected with real decision-making. To step away from this group at the moment was simply unthinkable. There was no decision to be made. Fra Ossa, who had devoted his entire life to preparing for such situations, no doubt knew this perfectly well. He wasn't really asking us to make a decision. He was telling us, in a reasonably diplomatic way, to shut up and concentrate on the matter at hand. And so that is what we did 18 hours a day, until the Drummond came to pick us up and take us out to the airfield. Though a casual observer might have thought we were working only half the time, and playing video games otherwise. Three of the cells that adjoined the courtyard had been equipped with syndevs hooked to big wraparound Spiele screens. In the center of each was a chair with disembodied spacesuit arms rigged to it. We'd take turns sitting in that chair with our hands stuck into the arms, groping at the controls. Projected on the screens around us was a simulation of what we might see out our face masks when we were floating around in low orbit, complete with all manner of readouts and indicators that, we were promised, would be superimposed on the view by the suit's built-in syndevs. The controls beneath our fingertips could be patched through to the thrusters on the Magnifiques, so that once we reached orbit, we'd be able to scoot around and accomplish certain tasks. Beneath the left hand was a little sphere that spun freely in a cradle. Beneath the right, a mushroom-shaped stick that could be moved in four directions as well as pushed down or pulled up. The former controlled the suit's rotation, which was pretty easy to manage. The latter controlled translation, moving across space as opposed to spinning in place. That would be tricky. Things in orbit didn't behave like what we were used to. Just to name one example, if I were pursuing another object in the same orbit, my natural instinct would be to fire a thruster that would kick me forward. But that would move me into a higher orbit, so the thing I was chasing would soon drop below me. Everything we knew down here was going to be wrong up there. Even for those of us who had learned orbital mechanics at Orlo's feet, the only way for us to really grasp it was by playing this game.